Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. It's day two for Laptop for Kids in our advanced class today. And as our panelists, we have
Josh
and Joanna
and Doris. So stay tuned as we discuss this technological article. Well, this is technology, that's for sure, and sometimes it's hard to explain. But thanks for coming back today, and thank you, teachers, for coming back to join us.
It's great to be here. We certainly had some difficult words in our lesson yesterday, Doris. I think our students got a good night's sleep.
I think so. Well, the main thing is to take an article that seems hard and pick out a few things and get the meaning of the article and forget the rest of it. That's what I do. What about you?
I think that's the important part. Learn a little bit from each thing, and it slowly sticks on and sticks on.
Right. Add something each time. Mm-hmm. So don't worry about all these hard words and sentences. But yesterday on page 18, when we talked about this laptops for all kids, what was the main idea of having those anyway?
Well, it was a utopian idea of one man to have a laptop for each child. It was targeted towards people at the bottom of the pyramid, people who don't make a lot of money.
And there's a lot of people in the world like that. There are a lot of areas where people really can hardly have enough to eat.
That's right. Africa, South America, and the success story we learned about at the beginning of our lesson yesterday in Central America, a country called Nicaragua.
And we learned that this man, Negroponte, he was the director of MIT's Media Lab, and he had this idea, why not make very inexpensive laptops and help these kids in Central America and South America? Why don't we help them develop and get into some better schemes for, you know, solving their social problems? Sounded good, but what was the problem with it?
Well, it turns out he is a visionary, but he's not a detail-oriented person. So he ran into several problems that it says were never matched. His vision wasn't matched by an attention to detail.
But his idea was good. And
it
a lot
was.
Of people have very good visionary ideas. But half of the time, most of these ideas never really get developed, actually.
Right. You need a plan, and then you need to execute the plan. And execution sometimes is the hardest part.
So today we're going to find out how this organization was already started, but then they had somebody come in and help them, and that changed things, didn't it?
Yes. We learn about how the company switched hands to someone who's more detail-oriented, and that's how it began to succeed.
And that's what we're going to learn about today on page 19. We're going to learn about a new approach. So let's read the first column.
A new approach. What critics ignore is that the organization has changed significantly since 2009, when Negroponte ceded day-to-day operations of OLPC to his friend Rodrigo Arboleda. I'm not the kind of person who has staff meetings at 8 a.m., but Rodrigo does, Negroponte says. A native Colombian, Arboleda has moved the organization's operating division to his hometown of Miami to be more convenient to Latin America, where most of the computers are located. Arboleda is running OLPC more like a business, while Negroponte once declared a goal of making XOs available at $100 a pop. Arboleda sells the computers to governments and not-for-profits for nearly $200, a price that's calculated to include overhead.
Now, a lot of people had probably heard about this organization, but most people didn't think it was so good. They had critics. They said, that's not a good idea. It's not going to work. And that's true of almost everything you do. But the critics forgot one thing. They ignored the fact that it's not the same organization today as when it started. Why not?
Well, it's got new leadership, and we learn that Negroponte has actually ceded the day-to-day operations to his friend. And when you cede something, it means you give up control. You hand over the reins to someone else. So Negroponte started this organization, we learned yesterday, back in 2005, and it took about 4 years of him at the helm before he has stepped aside and allowed significant change.
So he turned it over to this man who also has a name that sounds kind of like a South American name, right? Or Central American name. What's his name?
Rodrigo Arboleda.
Okay, and if you want to look up his name on Google, you can find out a lot about this man, and Wikipedia tells about him. And he is now, of course, the chairman, and he's the CEO of this company. But he was born in Colombia. And then he studied architecture, and he went to MIT, and that's where he met this man here.
Yes, Negroponte, we learned yesterday, was the head of the media lab at MIT, which is kind of a source of innovation, and that's where the gentlemen met.
And we learned some more things about him. Tells us more of what he did. And
well, yes, he has really turned this organization around. He was a visiting scholar at MIT, worked on the Digital Nations Consortium project, as well as the Education for Peace initiative. So sounds like he's always had a heart for kids and a heart for changing the world, and he's combined his love for children with his technology background.
And he was kind of a scholar. He was said it used to be an architect and that kind of thing. But he was the kind of person who had staff meetings that said at 8 o'clock. In other words, let's get together and have a plan. He didn't just say, let's go out and do it. He was the kind of man who liked to have structure, like an architect might have, right?
Well, this is what we're talking about when we talk about someone being detail-oriented and attention to detail. Arboleda is a detail person. It takes detail and discipline to get up at 8 in the morning and have a meeting. It's not all about being a dreamer, although dreaming is important too. This is the kind of man that turns those dreams into reality.
Right. You have to have a vision or you won't do anything, but then somebody has to make those things work. So those two made a very good combination, didn't they?
They did. And he also changed the shift, kind of the focus of the organization. When Negroponte was out promoting one laptop per child, it sounded like the focus was going to be on Africa, that was where the most need was, and that we would be supplying, you know, children in Ethiopia and in Africa with laptops all around. And Arboleda has changed the focus and moved the organization to his hometown of Miami, and where it can service the Latin American communities.
Right, and that's where most of the computers are located, so they can go from there down to Central and South America. So he's running it more now like a business. Now, sometimes when you have charities, it's hard to run them like a business. But you have to, Josh. You've been involved in that business type of thing. Don't you have to have a business plan even for charities?
You really do. And there are certainly lots of organizations that don't run with business plans and get into trouble. I've heard of athletes, foundations, and lots of charities that have had to close down because they didn't manage their money correctly. And even if you're not for profit, you still have to treat your resources with respect.
Well, that's true. You have to make a certain amount of money. For instance, like Studio Classroom is nonprofit, so you don't make a profit, but you have to pay for the radio stations, the TV station, the printing, or otherwise you can't even teach the programs on the air. So you have to make money so you can get the things out.
That's right.
And this is what he tried to do. What did he try to do here? It tells us his example. How did he do that?
Well, he made the price higher. And at first we think, oh no, now it costs twice as much. But, you know, don't think that yet. Negroponte once declared a goal of making these computers available at $100 a pop or $100 a piece, but Arboleda sells them for more, but he sells them to people who can afford it at that price, like governments and other not-for-profits.
Right.
But he sells them for $200, right?
Yes. So it's not individual poor children trying to buy these computers. It's organizations that can better afford it, and that price includes overhead, so he can afford to pay his staff salary.
That's right. So why did he charge more? Not because he was trying to get more from it, but you cannot charge the price that it costs you to do something. You have to charge to handle it. That's true in business. You know that.
Right. They're going to not exist if they continually lose $100 on every computer that they sold. And also, $100 is still a lot of money to a starving farmer. It was going to need to become a lot cheaper to become, you know,
right.
truly
you
in the hands of every child.
Right.
$10 or $20 is what, you know, a starving farmer in Africa could afford.
Right.
So to go from 100 to 200, it's still out of reach for the farmer.
Right. Somebody has to help out.
Right.
You have to get sponsors, right?
That's right.
But you have to charge enough to pay the salaries of the people working there, don't you?
Yes. So he's now, like Joe said, bringing it to governments, bringing it to not-for-profits who then can purchase them on behalf of the people at the bottom of the pyramid.
So we have these two men, the one who started it, the visionary, and the one who's now running it. Now, what was the biggest difference between those two men?
Well, it sounds like Negroponte's the person who had the big vision, but he needed someone to actually think of all the little details for how to make it happen.
Right.
And Arboleda is that person.
He pays attention to details. Isn't that right?
I think it's probably unfortunate that it took them 4 years to figure out that Negroponte couldn't execute the vision. There was probably a lot of time and energy and money wasted. But better late than never, right?
He probably got people to sponsor them and took them different places, but they saw it wasn't getting any results. So they thought, well, why isn't it getting results? Well, there's some reasons we're going to find out as we read on. So let's find out about building up communities. It's not just having the hardware. You need the software, which means the people to teach it too, not just the machines, but you need somebody to help teach it. Let's read the next section.
Building up communities. Furthermore, Arboleda has invested heavily in teacher training, unlike Negroponte. Ever since the day we started, we've been getting pretty endless criticism, he explains, usually around the idea that you can give a kid a laptop and walk away. But that's exactly what Negroponte believes will empower self-directed learning in the developing world. In fact, he's been experimenting with leaving laptops in remote Ethiopian villages and has spoken several times in public appearances about literally dropping them out of helicopters. Today's OLPC seems to have left that view behind. Chief Financial Officer Robert Hacker says, "The fact is every new project we've done since 2010 has had significant teacher training. Arboleda staff is also building local capacity to maintain and evaluate the programs. In Managua, for example, OLPC has a warehouse staffed with university students who repair the EXOs and send them back out to classrooms. In the 3 years since Arboleda took over, OLPC has grown from 1 million computers in the field to nearly 2.5 million in more than 40 countries from the South Pacific to Madagascar."
Well, let's look at this first section again on page 19, the second column, that paragraph when we're talking about what they really need. Now, Arboleda has done something that's very important. He invested heavily in teacher training. Now, that's interesting. The other one didn't. They just dropped him off someplace.
That's right. And it says they got endless criticism for that approach, Negroponte's approach, that if you could just give a kid a laptop and walk away, that all his problems would be solved.
Well, you can't do that with your own kids today. Can't you just give them a laptop and say, do what you want with it? You have to guide them, don't you?
Of course. If you leave them alone, they'll end up just playing mindless games for 3 hours straight.
You have to say, well, let's do this one. After you do this, you can do that. You have to regulate it, and you have to teach them how to use other things, don't you?
That's right.
Well, I think his ideal world what he was thinking of was to leave a laptop with a kid who was particularly creative, and they would get in there and figure out how it worked and make programs to help regulate, you know, food income in his poor, starving village. That's ideal, but that's something that might happen like once in a few million chances. The rest of the poor villagers and children aren't that, you know, creative and need to be taught.
It wasn't a very practical idea. It sounds like he wasn't a very practical person. He was a visionary, but he wasn't down to earth. He wasn't practical.
I could just picture an entire village playing Words with Friends, but no one's eating or benefiting from it.
Right. So you can't just leave these laptops in these remote villages in Africa, you know, and just dropping them. Actually, dropping them out of helicopters. Say, here's one that'll help you learn. Can you imagine them learning that way?
I can't imagine that he said it several times without someone on his staff saying, Nicholas, that's not a good idea. But that's what he had said, that let's experiment and leave laptops in remote Ethiopian villages. And I talked earlier that my impression of the organization was that it was focused in Africa, and Ethiopia is a country in Africa, and that if you leave something in a remote village, it means that there's probably no internet connection or maybe no electricity. So I'm not sure how this little laptop was going to help them.
Well, they use it to prop up their crooked tables to keep it from rocking back and forth.
They use it for plates when they eat supper.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of crazy to think that they're going to know how to do that.
It really is.
But he meant well. And he did get criticism, though. So I don't think he needs our criticism now.
No.
But he did get it. But he did, thankfully, have somebody to come in and help him. Now, the difference in our Boletta, he said, we need to invest in teacher training. We need to have people show them how to use it. Now, that certainly makes sense to me.
It does to me, too, Doris, that yes, if we can build programs that are unique to different age groups and then get the adults and the teachers around these kids to learn how to teach them to use these programs, that an inexpensive laptop could be one part of an improvement in education. I don't think it's the magic pill by any means, but it certainly could be effective.
I think it's important to at least, you know, learn how to use our, these are supposed to be very powerful and important tools. Even if they are basic laptops, you need training in order to teach the people who are using them how to use them best, and then listen to the people who are using them on how to improve.
That's true. Like even today, a lot of our friends, you know, older people even are getting iPads. They didn't use them before. But they can just have it sit there and not know how to use it. But when I ever see that somebody has a new one, I say, did you know there's this program? You can get TuneIn Radio and listen to radio. They didn't know that. They might have had it sitting there. Mm-hmm. They don't even use it. You have to tell them how to use the things on it.
Absolutely.
Or they don't know. In order to use your iPad, don't just say, oh, isn't that interesting? It keeps them busy. You got to give them something to do on it. Older people and younger people, both, don't you?
We all need to learn. Absolutely. Learn what can our technology do for us.
So we all are teachers to each other. We help each other, don't we? You learn new things from other people. They show you what they did.
Oh, sure.
How could they learn without teachers? Well, thankfully, this Arbelio is in charge now, isn't he? And today, they seem to be quite a bit different. It says, today's old OLPC seems to have left that view behind about just dropping them off there. And what does the chief financial officer, Robert Hacker, say?
Well, he says, the fact is, every new project we've done since 2010, so just a year after Arboleda took control of the organization, every project since then has had significant teacher training. So not just some, but significant, which means a large and important amount of something.
Okay. What else has he done with his staff?
Well, he's also building local capacity or ability to maintain and evaluate the programs. What good is this computer if it breaks and there's no one within 2,000 miles to fix it? That's not very helpful. It's more helpful to train people there to fix it themselves.
And to evaluate means to then study the effectiveness of. And that's also very important, to then track the progress that these children are making with the programs.
Right, to see what they've learned compared to when they didn't have one. That's good. Well, in Managua, which is in Nicaragua, mm-hmm. in that place, the OLPC, they have their own warehouse there. And what's in the warehouse?
Well, it's staffed with students repairing the XOs, which is the nickname given to this computer, the one lap per child computer, and send them back out to the classrooms when they're fixed.
Because we all know that something can go wrong, just some little thing, and then nothing works. That's very frustrating. I've got all this, but I can't use it. So if nobody can fix it, what good is it? So that's what you were talking about.
Exactly.
They can repair them. They have college students. It gives them a job.
Yep.
Well, what's happened then in the last, Joanna, in the last 3 years since Arbel et al. Took over?
Well, OLPC has grown from 1 million computers in the field to nearly 2.5 million in more than 40 countries all over the world.
Now, that's a very big change in a short time compared to the beginning of the company, isn't it?
That really is. It was around 4 years and only did a million out there. And in the 3.5 years since, it's more than doubled. And now he's in 40 countries from the South Pacific to Madagascar.
So it's gone all over now. And they have people. They have people who also can have jobs. Their jobs can be repairing. And they can. That would help the social problems. Have people that know how to repair them. People that know how to teach them. You're giving everybody jobs, not just giving them to these kids. That helps the whole economy, doesn't it?
I think that's much more helpful than just leaving a child to learn a math game on a computer. Bringing these computers into the village and actually making sure that they work properly and are being helpful helps lots of aspects of the economy as well.
Right, and even guide their thinking. Sometimes these kids have ideas, but a teacher can help them know how to use the idea better, can't they, Josh?
They sure can. You know, there's kind of almost a backlash against technology in some places where they're saying we don't need to introduce computers too early to kids, that there's plenty of time for them to learn technology. Do you think that there are really important skills that kids can pick up from computers at an early age?
Well, you know, Josh, they say that the kids' brains are different from the time of 1 to 5 and then 5 to 10 and so forth. So if they learn a language, anything that you hear before you're 5 years old, you can learn it better, quicker, and last longer. And if you're 5 up to 10 in that age, your brain cells are working well. You can learn more. And I think it's good to learn. It's like another language they have a computer. It's good to learn them. But like everything you learn, it has to be directed and taught. You just don't go ahead and learn to do whatever you want. You have to have that learned form by teachers helping the kids. So I think it's not too early for them. But I do think that parents shouldn't just give a kid a computer and just let them do whatever they want with it. What do you think?
No, I think computer skills are very important for children to learn as they're growing older, not only for learning their subject, but also the best-paying jobs involve using a computer. And where will they be if they graduate from high school? They can't afford to go to university and they need a job. Who will be hired first, the kid who can use a computer well or the one who has no idea how to use one?
Well, and then if you really know how to use one, you can find a lot of courses and graduate from a university by using the computer, too.
That's true.
It'd be a lot cheaper. So, I mean, computers are part of our life now, and I don't think we can reject them by saying they're too young. It's just like anything. A child has to learn manners. They have to learn how to act, when to go to bed, when to get up. You can't just let them do whatever they want, but still, you still let them be part of the world. So you have to introduce it to them, but in a good way. So a parent is a teacher, too.
I agree.
What do you think that with your kids? You've seen that.
I certainly have, yes. We introduced technology to them very early on, but it's guided. It's only for a certain amount of time per day or per week. And, you know, they're learning to respect it. They understand the power of it. But we don't, you know, make
that's
it the center
of our That's not the only thing
home.
In their life. Right. Well, the same way when television first started, some people were not going to let their kids watch television and so forth. But that's the same thing. They don't just sit there all day and watch it or whenever they want or whatever they want to watch. All of these kinds of things that come in, they still need to get outside and play. They need to interact with other people. But you can use these things and at the same time build them up into their social skills. They have to go hand in hand.
I like that it's teaching the kids subjects that they're already learning, but it's a new way of teaching. I remember when I was a child, we got our first family PC when I was about third grade, and we had a few educational games, and we were nuts about them. Me and my sister, we just loved them. We loved playing them. We learned quite a lot. I learned how to type from these sorts of programs.
Right.
It wasn't really mindless games at all. It was mostly educational, but I can attribute several skills I have now to stuff I learned for fun, I thought, back when I was, you know, a child.
Sure. Well, that's true. And I think that's very important for people to realize, to use it to train people. Like some of the games, you have to have knowledge to answer the question. I wish that we could have more of our tests that we do in all our schools. Everybody says they hate tests wherever you go. But tests could be fun. If you have a test on the computer and you get the wrong answer, there'll be something say, oop, try again, or whatever it is. And then you keep trying until you get the right answer. Then you learn something. It doesn't matter if you're number one in the class, but if you could have fun ways, little things come on and let you know the answer, try it again, and pretty soon you could get 100 on every test if you go over and over it, then you've learned it. So tests are not only to see what you know, but they're to help you learn what you don't know. So I think if tests were on computers, we wouldn't have these people hating tests. If you had fun tests, I'm all for fun games for tests. Are you?
I agree.
Let's get some going, Joanna. Think of some new good ways to do tests for kids.
Oh, goodness. We can't let them have all the fun.
Well, I know. They need a little fun when they learn. You learn more when you're having fun.
That's right. And I'm sure that's why you're listening right now, students, because you've had fun in the advanced classroom with Doris.
I hope so. Yeah, and we're going to go a little bit more about this, the growing trend. We'll talk about it more, not only about this company, but the trend and the legacy of it. So be sure and be with us tomorrow, whether you're a technologically inclined person or just a housewife or a kid, whatever you are, listen to Advance and you'll learn something new every day. So thanks for being with us today. Check the website and we'll see you back when we have our next program tomorrow. Goodbye.
Goodbye.